Oh, man, you just better be ready, because old Daddy is ready tonight. I'll tell you, you know, just some night you just arrived. Just as hairy as you can be, man. And, look out. Stand back. Can't you just feel pure animal vitality radiating through that miserable 3-inch Japanese loudspeaker you got there, huh? Vibrant. Bring it up there, big Herbert. Yeah. The captain is here, by God. Oh, that's what summer does to you, I'll tell you. You can get in more trouble in the summertime than all the winter times for the last 20 years put together. Thank you, Herb. Hey, what is the date? Quick. 7th, huh? That's what I thought. This is a historic day. Yes, sir. On July the 7th, once when I was a kid, I remember it vividly because, you know, your dates stick in your mind, man. Who can forget, it's on the tip of my tongue. Who can forget, this, some harbor or something day, who can forget Pearl Harbor Day? December 3rd, 1941. Who can forget it? I mean, there are certain dates that are just emblazoned on your mind. Like, for example, the year that 1496 is the year that Columbus discovered America. There are certain dates you cannot forget. And July 7th was a day that my old man received after, you know, some guys have got a lifetime ambition to own a Ferrari, you know. Other guys have got a lifetime ambition to meet Sophia Loren. I mean, it's kind of connected with Ferrari, you know, same kind of thing, very high octane, very dangerous, too. Oh, yeah. Ferrari's a great thing to look at, but I don't know whether you should own one. I mean... And then other guys have got the idea in their craw someplace to own a Ferrari and to meet Sophia Loren. Then there's other guys who say, the hell with the Ferrari, and they're they want to do a little more than meet Sophia Loren. Of course, these are the overreachers. They're always with us all the time. And these are guys that just as likely as not to walk right into a wearing blender, Whistling Dixie, and come out beautifully blended. Put some radish cream, a few little pears, and make them into a nice puree. However, July the 7th marks the day that my father achieved his great life ambition. His ambition was not to own a Ferrari, or a nice auto Ferracini, or to bowl 7 300 games in succession, or to meet Luke Appling, the famous Chicago White Sox shortstop. It was to own an E.H. Scott DH-16 receiver, radio set. Did you ever hear of that? You never heard of an E.H. Scott? Well, that was the Ferrari of the radio world. And the old man, on July the 7th, received a Ferrari of the radio world. He had made his down payment, and 6 weeks later, on July the 7th, in 1823, this magnificent radio set was delivered into the front yard of our house by a big truck. And these two gorilla types, you know, unloaded it. You know, get it out of here, kid. And they throw it out in the yard. And the old man comes home from work, and he brings the receiver into the house, you know, with about 9 guys. And they open it up, and here is this magnificent radio set, which my old man had always wanted all of his life to own. An E.H. Scott. Did you ever hear of an E.H. Scott radio set? You didn't. Well, nobody else did, but the old man did. And it was supposed to be a fantastic radio. And it had short wave, long wave, medium wave, sonar, had an airplane dial on it that looked like it really did. It looked like the control panel of a 747, you know, everything going there. And the old man was all excited. He put up an antenna. He'd had this antenna for weeks. You know the excitement of plugging in and hooking up new equipment? Well, that often doesn't work out exactly the way you had thought it would. He plugged the thing in, And Mr. Selke and Heine Gertz and Zudok and the whole crowd were standing around. He fires this thing up, turns the switch on, and the lights light up, you know, blue, green, purple, red for international shortwave, you know. And they had one of these dials, you know, with these all these fantastic places marked on it. You know, that you all you can do is tune to that number and you get Reykjavik. You know, they have a little, it says Madrid. It says Zamboanga at 21.7 meters. Places like, you know, Madagascar. Eight different signals, you know, come from Madagascar. He plugs it in, sits there, turns up the gain. Nothing. And after about 10 minutes, he's looking at it, real discouraged, throwing all the knobs, reading the book. It starts to go, a deep, low, rich, 110 cycle, 60 cycle, 110 volt hum coming out of its 15-inch Jensen matching loudspeaker, which, by the way, was in the Notre Dame Cathedral High Boy model cabinet. It's a fantastic cabinet. Had gargoyles all over. You know, you've seen these wild cabinets with doors that fold back and a whole bit. See? And when a 16-inch Jensen speaker is giving you 110-volt, 60-cycle hum, it can roughly be heard, believe me, in Olathe, Kansas. You could just feel it in that, right down in your gut. And way in the background of that hum, you can hear a radio signal faintly. It's going, oh, no. Right from the instant, it ain't working. The old man flipped. He said words which even to this day I've not heard yet again. Hell, yeah, you guys think you've heard all the swear words? You have not. If not, there are swear words that only the true artist in cursing knows. And the old man, of course, he was like the E. Power Biggs of the four-letter word. He had a vocabulary, and what he had more than anything else was timing, Herb. He had timing and taste. He knew when to use a word, and the unused word is even more effective quite often than the used word. And he just sat there for about 5 minutes. Gertz, who was a magnificent dirty joke teller, and also a pretty good man with a four-letter word, Gertz just stood there with his jaw hanging open. The old man just let it flow, you know, like a rich, deep, kind of molten lava river flow of human passion and anger, disgust, disappointment. And 2 days later, the E.H. Scott serviceman showed up. And the guy looked at the old man and says, "What's the matter?" And the old man says, "Oh." And he went on again for about 5 minutes. The guy says, "Wait a minute, let's take a look here. Just a minute here." And, of course, by this time, everybody had been moved out of the house. The house was off limits to human beings. The old man, you know, was staying up to 4 o'clock in the morning, turning this thing off and on, hoping he can catch it by surprise. You know, if he catches it real quick, it'll work, see, but it didn't. In fact, the hum is getting louder, if anything. And, you know, the old man's really bugged by this time. And all of us had been moved. We were moved to my grandmother's house. My brother and my kid brother were staying down at my grandmother's. My mother had moved to Cedar Lake, a summer cottage that she with Mrs. Selke, and, you know, get out of the house. And so the old man, on the third day, the serviceman arrived. He walked in. And we were back home. It was a visiting day, see. And the old man was bugged. He hadn't shaved in 3 days. He hadn't gone to work. His eyes were bloodshot. I mean, you know, he was really in a bad way. You could see empty beer cans all over the kitchen, the whole bit. And he'd been sitting around in his underwear mad. You know, you could see where he'd been eating Spam out of a can. You know, it's all mad. And, oh, yeah, you know, he gave up. Well, I just wonder how many guys have traumatic experiences with equipment they buy. You know, like all of your life, you hope you can buy this Maserati. And you get the Maserati, and it turns out it's got a transmission made out of spaghetti, you know, or pasta, the differential. 5 minutes later, it's a $900 repair bill. And, oh, you know, makes that sound all the time, and the brakes chatter. Well, anyway, the serviceman walked in, and, of course, all of us were scared. We thought the old man would kill him, you know. And a very cool-looking guy, and he's got this big case full of stuff. You get a volt ohm meter, you know, weighed 40 pounds. test prods. He had a signal generator. He had, you know, all kinds of square wave generator. Hewlett Packard. He had everything with him, you know. And he had this cool look, and he walks in. He says, what is the trouble? And the old man says, what is the trouble? What's the trouble? Turn that thing on. Just turn it on. And with that, the serviceman just goes on, and he calmly switches the switch on. Starts to hum. He laughs. Oh, he says, my God, why do they sell these to such stupid people? And the old man, you know, it's purple. And because the old man had created this myth around the house, you know, he knew all about radio. You know, there's a certain type of male who creates the myth around him that he's with it. You know, he knows about cars. Take old Fred, you know, and he'll look at the car for you when you're going to buy a used car. He'll look at it. You see him. See, they put the hood up. He walks around. He wiggles the air cleaner on the top, you know, and looks to us and says, oh, yeah, it's a very good oil filter there. And he's pointing to the generator, you know, that kind of thing. So, anyway, the old man had created the atmosphere in the house. And he knew all about radio, see. And this serviceman says, oh, Jesus, they should send somebody out to install it for you. So he says, look, he said, see, the cap of the 57 detector tube is off. Here, see this little cap that fits on the top? You just push it down, and it'll work fine. And you know the little cap on the top, the grid cap on it? He just reaches back there, and he just goes, boom! And instantly, you know, instantly, in comes Rome, you know, instantly. Instantly, 5,000 watts of audio come in, you know, and we're getting direct from Sicilia, you know, we're getting Palmetto. And the old man flips. Of course, you see, it was a Pyrrhic victory. On the one hand, his Scott, which was the love of his life, was working. On the other hand, never again could he say around the house, you know, just call me and I'll fix your radio for you. He was the laughing stock of the entire neighborhood. He didn't. But that Scott, July 7th, I remember it vividly. And I'll tell you what, tonight I'm going to ask a question. Does anybody know, and this is for pure sentimentality's sake, because there are 529,468 billion radios at this day and age that work better than the E.H. Scott of that period, but does anybody know where I can lay my hands on an old E.H. Scott, DX-16 or DX-10 or DX-23? Does anybody know in working condition? An old DX, E.H. Scott. I will install it in my office. And every July 7th, see, I will turn it on. And we will listen to Palermo briefly. Yeah, thank you. Seriously, reset that. I'm going to use that. Reset that, Herb. This is WOR in New York. If you think you're listening to the DX, forget it. It's just that we got a bad signal. This is WOR in New York. Old fun city here. And we got to have a little bippy or two here. Do you have the, open the money, Luis, here. Here it comes down the mountainside. Rich and beautiful and green. Yeah.
Hey, all you have to do to like it is try it. Misunderstood soft drink, but not for long.
Yeah. You like that, don't you, Herb? All right, let's have the next one on your little list here.
Effective immediately, Ford's new Torino is up to $200 less than anything else its size. Take Ford's suggested retail price for its newest low-priced Torino and stack it up against a manufacturer's suggested retail price for a comparably equipped Chevelle. Torino is $112 less. put the same Torino smack up against Belvedere. Torino is $143 less on the same basis. And that same Torino is up to $200 less than anything else its size. But hold on a minute. Wasn't Torino voted Motor Trend Magazine's Car of the Year against the same competition? You bet it was. Torino beat them on style and performance, and now Torino beats them on price. Prices will never be this low again, so come on, see your Ford dealer now.
Torino. Hey, does anybody know what that means in Italian? It sounds like an Italian word, doesn't it? Torino, or is it one of those nonsensical, fake foreign words that some kind of a commuter... You know, the computers turn out fake words. Did you know that? You can set your computer, and, you know, one of the big problems today is labeling things. Remember when they had this tremendous contest to name... Hey, listen, that reminds me. I'm gonna ask you a question tonight. Speaking of car cuckoos, two cars that I remember had giant national contest to name them. To name the car. In other words, there was a new car being brought out, and two of them that I remember had these enormous, you know, national contests to name the car. And do you remember what the names were? What were they? What cars were they? And I'll give you one very strong clue. Neither one of them is still with us. Which is a lesson. Don't let the public anything to do with what you're doing. You'll die. I'm just curious. Do any of you remember two cars that were named by public voting? And what were the two cars? And as far as I remember, one car did and was named by the public. In other words, somebody actually suggested the name, and they gave him a prize. They gave him a new car and all that stuff. But the other one, they got about 28 million names, and they didn't like any of them, and they finally wound up by picking their own name. Which was a terrible mistake. And one clue I will give you, it was not the Falcon. No. What were these two? Why do I remember this junk? Why do I remember this junk? You know, it's the bad news. You know, speaking of naming things, you know that computers, you see, today they have a type of computer, or you can program a computer so that it creates artificial words. And drug companies, for example, they will have a new product coming up, like Flamagen or something. Say, you know, the Flamagen with DX9, the separate fragmento. And they'll feed all this jazz into it, and this thing will turn out like 2,500 fake words, like clavinin, like Krypton D. It'll turn out great sounding names, thousands of them, and they're all fake names. They have nothing to do with anything real, and they're just artificially created words. And then they pick one of these, and that's the name of the new drug. Well, they also do this with cars. And that's why so many cars have these names, which don't really have any real meaning in languages, but they sound like they do. You know, Torino. it's a great sounding name. But if you ask anybody what a Torino is and where's a Torino, it may turn out to be a soup tureen or something. It has nothing to do with cars. But the machine that turned out this name just thought it would be a great name for a car, you know? Camaro. You remember what the big excitement about Camaro? Well, you know what Camaro means? Camaro is a word, I'm not going to stir up the commotion again, but it had problems. Now, listen, you know, speaking of the car and our time, I don't know whether this is a coincidence, but a couple of weeks ago, you know, we talked about Bluebird, you remember? About the, I'm one of the first guys who can't stand Bluebirds. Yeah, well, you know, my mother had this record, see, and I think we're all the products of what we were. And don't think for any minute Shepard is sitting around here being nostalgic about when he was a kid. I just think that we are the products of what we were when we were a kid. I imagine the young Dick Nixon was exactly the way he is now. Yeah, you know, I just see him, second man on the debating team. He's the one that compiles the dry facts. And the first man on the debating team was probably a real, you know, flamboyant type, you know, who later went in and became a pitch man on the boardwalk. But Dick Nixon, he was the anchor man, you know, the really sound, solid, you know, the kind of guy. He's always the one who says, all right, you guys can go ahead and you can edit the literary magazine and all that stuff. But remember this, there's somebody has to do the thankless tasks, like going out and selling the ads. And I will sell the ads for the literary magazine. I could just see him. There's always a guy like that. And now, what about this Bluebird thing? Well, I'll tell you this. My mother had this record. She would always put on the record player. It had a Sears robot, a Sears tone record player. It had a big, you know, big crystal arm sticking out. And she'd plug this thing all the time. And on would come this guy. Now, I don't know who it is who recorded this record, but he was always singing, a blue bird of happiness. And a high, loud voice, and she would sit there, and she's listening to Bluebird Happiness. And I'd say, hey, Ma, you know, bluebirds, they're not a good bird, really, you know? And she said, she says, what are you? See, if it had been today, she'd have said, you know, it's so sad that my son is turning into a hippie. She'd say, why, that's a beautiful thing. That's just beautiful. Because my mother, like all people of her generation, believed in bluebirds. Bing Crosby, Sonia Henie. Yeah, she believed in Sonia Henie, you know. The way people of today's generation believe in Joan Baez. You know, she thought Sonia Henie was so pure and beautiful and all that, you know. Brought nothing but truth to the lives of, you know, all those people. And I see that I'm not alone. A determined group of pigeon lovers gave the bird to the legislature. This is the New York legislature. I'm finally behind them. Yesterday for, quote, the arrogance of upstate politicians in making the bluebird the official feathered thing of New York State. Did you know that we are now officially the bluebird state? City residents against bluebirds. That's a great sounding, that's a de facto committee, you know, in an ad hoc committee. The city residents against bluebirds wired Governor Rockefeller to veto the bluebird bill and ask a statewide referendum on the issue of selecting a state bird. The organization demanded that the bird, quote, be vetoed, or at least pigeonholed. According to the group, bluebirds, quote, are predatory animals. They're predatory animals that victimize lesser prey. Most city residents have never even seen one. And two, quote, rural-oriented states, Idaho and Missouri, long ago had adopted it as their official bird. What the heck's New York got it? It says, the pigeon, and we quote here, we feel is the only representative bird for the harassed urban dweller. The organization wired Rockefeller. Yeah, but I must point out that New York is not only urban, you know, friends. Although New York City people like to believe that, you know. All that real estate out there is just a place for New Yorkers to go on the weekend. Quote, its population in a crisis-ridden city has grown in recent years, proving that this brave bird, the pigeon, can endure and flourish in the worst of all possible environments, New York City. Well, now, I'd like to propose here tonight a compromise, and I think one that all of you would like. I would like to have our state, New York State, which I'm very proud of. There's no, I mean, we got such a groovy state. I mean, it's such a great state, you know. We're first in so many things, like cost of living, and like taxes. And, you know, we got so many great things, you know, like most slums and all that. I think we've got a lot going for us here. And we're first, you know, we're a first-tier state. So why don't we be the first in America to make one of two birds the official bird of the state of New York? I mean, that can fit in all categories. I would like to suggest the common garden variety starling. Because the simple native of the field who lives up in the Adirondack neighborhood, he knows the starling well and loves him. And what resident of 125th Street hasn't been bombed by 6 million starlings at twilight? Of course. And the starling, I think the trouble why we're having so much problems with starlings is we fight them. I mean, a starling is a perverse bird, and we fight him all the time, so naturally he's going to give us the you-know-what every time he can. Now, if we give him a little credit, make him the state bird and bring him into us, you know, integrate him, bring him in with us, make him work for a bigger and a better New York State, well, then I suspect that we could be on the way to at last final civilization, when you really work with things. Now, the other bird that I briefly thought of, it was a little impractical, but I kind of thought we could really cause a lot of excitement if we made the vulture our national bird, or, you know, our state bird. Because after all, New York is a state that leads in one quality, which all the other states just don't have, and it's chutzpah. I mean, and what bird has got more chutzpah than the vulture? He knows where it is. You know, he doesn't, no sentiment about a vulture. He's a straightforward bird. You can know, you know where you stand. As a matter of fact, tonight I was listening to the ball game, speaking of New York, and they're broadcasting from Baltimore, see. It's the Yankee game. And Phil Rizzuto is talking to Frank Messer or somebody, see, and he says, oh, boy, he said, holy cow, is this town really hipped up for the, man, it's like World Series here. He says, driving in, he said, I hear all these guys on the radio putting the whammy on the Yankees. He says, they're going to try to beat us four straight or three straight. Wow, holy smokes. And with that, the other guy says, well, yeah, Phil, did you hear Jack Lacey, who used to be in New York radio? He's on here in Baltimore, and you should have heard him really giving the Yankees the business. And there's a pregnant pause, and Phil said, who? And with that, the other guy says, Jack Lacey, he used to be on here. As a matter of fact, Jack Lacey used to be on the radio station. He was on in the afternoon before the games that you played. He used to be on. Oh, he says, well, I know what's bugging him. He's been sent down to the minors. He's in Baltimore now. There's a pregnant pause. And Phil says, any time you're outside of New York City, you're camping out. So, I mean, let's face it, you know. And I think New York is a big enough state. We don't need a sickening bird like the bluebird. It's a silly bird. I mean, that's a, you know, ridiculous bird. I agree with that. That's a silly. Our legislature is really getting out of hand. I mean, a bluebird. I wonder who suggested that. I'd like to, you know, bring him up here and try to explain this to us. I mean, first of all, how many of you have ever seen a bluebird? That's right. Bluebirds are damn rare, as a matter of fact. I mean, not many of them around. And what are around are pretty bad, they're real bad bippies in the neighborhood there. But there's no bluebirds, and most of you can't find them around. You don't see them in the Bronx often. I mean, if you do, be careful. He's working a scene. And I just tell you that that the bluebird is not a representative state. You know, the Benjamin Franklin had this hang-up, too. Yeah, well, they were trying to figure out what's going to be the national bird. You know, everybody's sitting around there plumping for the eagle. He says, the eagle, you're out of your mind. He says, eagle, what do you mean eagle? He says, eagle, you know, that's a bad bird. That's a bird of prey, man. It goes out there and it just tears everything up, you know. And everybody wanted the eagle, see. And he says, I'll tell you what we ought to have as our national bird. And he was pretty close. You got to hand it to Franklin. He knew, you know, this guy knew where it was. He was right on, man. And in a lot of ways, you probably read the letters that Franklin wrote back when he was in France, when he was the ambassador there. Oh, let me tell you, the Frenchmen are still mad at Americans for that, you know? I mean, that's one of the basic reasons Frenchmen hate Americans, because that guy came over there and showed them how. I mean, in the very league that they thought they were number one in, man. You heard about him, didn't you? I guess it was that grandfatherly look he had, you know? And nobody suspected him of anything. See, the next thing you know, he's up there showing his chick his etchings and, oh, man, you know, and his Chippendales and all that stuff, you know. And, you know, this old guy. But anyway, you know what bird he was plumping for? No, not the crow. Crying out loud. The trouble is you've been hanging around Wingate too much. That's the kind of thing he'd say. Now, come on, we're trying to stick with historical reasoning here. What was it? Did anybody call about an E.H. Scott? Come on, you guys. Shepherd is going to have an E.H. I'll give it a good home. I'll polish it up, and I'll put a little plaque with your name over it. I'll say, this listener, Charles W.C. Strunk of 1422 and a half Klutz Road, P-Pack, New Jersey, rose above the muck and the mire of ordinary listenerdom and contributed this E.H. Scott to the Shepherd Museum of American Trivia. And we'll get it working and play it, you know, make everybody mad around here. See, and if we could get one that has a null at 7:10, in other words, I can't get anything else, so I'm sitting in my, you know, can't get WRZ, so I'm sitting in my office there. Every time I turn it on, in comes Herb Oscar Anderson or some, you know, big talent like that. And, oh, man, you know. But, oh, yes, there's all kinds of ways of being subversive. But nevertheless, oh, yeah, did you hear about the guy that... The first guy a couple years ago, out in Detroit, you know, they have this big parking lot where all the guys work at a General Motors plant. And the first guy that did it, he drove into the big parking lot out there with his very own, and he was on the assembly line with his very own VW. And, man, I'll tell you, did you hear about that? Whoo! Oh, yeah, there's a lot of yelling about that. Another E.H. Scott? Now, come on, tell it. Did you get what models they are? Well, I want all of you to write, anybody who's got an E.H. Scott or knows where I can get one, write to me here and get the model number, you know, the whole, get the information on it, and we'll carry it for that. Don't just call it, yeah, I know what is one. That's the H.H. Scott. It's E.H. E.H. Scott, not H.H. E.H., two separate companies. So don't confuse the two. E.H., not H.H., E.H. Scott. Ravenswood Avenue. They were built on Ravenswood Avenue in Chicago. And it's not H.H. But nevertheless, you don't know what Benjamin Franklin wanted for a bird? The turkey. That is right. And he's pretty right, you know. That's a base. Even though very few people have ever seen a wild turkey, I wonder how many have ever seen a wild eagle. Well, I did. As a matter of fact, I saw a wild eagle here last year, and I'll never forget it. In fact, I've seen two wild eagles. I mean, being eagles. I don't mean sitting in a zoo someplace. I mean working eagles. And in fact, I was on the third hole of a golf course at Marco Island, Florida. Beautiful golf course down there. There was nobody around, absolutely nobody. And I was on the third green, and the guy I was with, a friend of mine, he was putting out. And gee, it was just beautiful, not a sound, and you can smell the ocean there. And that's the greatest, one of the greatest bird sanctuaries in the world is around there, by Naples, Florida. Tremendous. It's part of the Everglades, see. And all of a sudden, right down the middle of the fairway, and he flew right over the green, not more than 20, 25 feet above our heads, was this magnificent eagle. He just drifted right over. You could hear the wind going through his wing, just drifted right over and into the pine trees. Fantastic bird. And then, not more than two or three months later, I was on an island called Yusepa Island, which is near Tampa Bay. It's actually near Fort Myers, off the west coast of Florida. And it's a very remote island. In fact, nobody, you can't even get there unless you have a certain boat and so on, and have to know how to get there. And it's an old pirate island. Actually, it was a pirate hangout. And there's nothing on there except this one place, this one house. And I was walking around there, this little island, and there on a tree right ahead of me was a knocked-off top of a pine tree, an old dead pine tree. The top was knocked off. Was this huge nest. And standing up in the nest was the most magnificent bald eagle. Tremendous bald eagle. Not an osprey, a bald eagle. Just standing there, looking around. Big hooked beak. And I walked right up to it. I was about maybe 8 or 9 feet from it. Just stood there and looked at it. Bird didn't move, just looked. And I stood there a couple of minutes, cursing the fact I didn't have any camera or anything. You know, how many people are going to see a bald eagle, you know, on its nest? And it just sitting there. And then all of a sudden the eagle got a little nervous. And there were clouds floating over. It's a beautiful, idyllic day when all of a sudden he just took off. Just tremendous flapping of wings. And he glided up. He just took off. They got a heavy body for its wingspread. He has to take a lot of flapping to get up, you know. And he got up. And once they get up, boy, they fly beautifully. They have this magnificent upturned wingtip, and he just sort of glided way down this hill. There was a hill that went down to a bay below, and there was a big sailboat in the bay down there, and he just drifted down over the scrub pines and out over the water, and he just crossed the bay, and I saw this bird disappear on the other side of the spit of land. I thought, what a fantastic bird. But it's certainly not a typical bird. I mean, you can't call it a typical bird. Now, if you're gonna take a bird for its typicalness, I mean, that's one thing. You'd have to probably take a sparrow. You know, I've often thought that what we should have for a national symbol is the Cocker Spaniel. I mean, that's so American, you know, weeping, always wants to be loved. And, yeah, that's so typical of Americans, you know, wants to be loved everywhere. It goes, wags its tail all over the place, and you pet it on its head, and it wets on the floor and all that. You know, this is a real American-type dog. On the other hand, you know, I must say, though, I have to agree with him that the bluebird is not a good bird for the state of New York. Now, it may be all right for other states, but not New York. No, no. Quite possibly the electric eel might be a good animal. Have you ever thought of having a state animal? You know, certain states have an animal. How many of you can tell me what the state flower of New York is? I'll give you one clue. We chickened out there. We didn't make it crabgrass, which, you know, would have been great. To me, this is just the kind of stuff I plump for. There's nothing wrong with crabgrass, you know. It's just a little crabby here and there. But nevertheless, what is the state flower of New York? You know, if you were to think of a typical scene of New York, to put on the seal. You know how they have a section of the countryside on the seal? For example, you go out to certain states like California, and they have this seal that shows the sun and beautiful thing. You know, you see the mountains. It's on the seal. And what do you think the New York seal looks like? I'll tell you what we ought to have in bas-relief, you know, all carved out of bronze. A scene at 527 on the Long Island Expressway. See? Stretching into the distance, you see. This is it. And in the distance, you have this symbolic cloud of smog drifting up. You know, it's all carved out of beautiful bas-relief, and underneath it has the, you know, the New York State slogan, in hoc agricola conc, in est spittel lauc. And, you know, it would be kind of beautiful and truthful. That's what we want to do. We want to start, you know, have a little truth around here. By the way, you know what country has the absolute worst traffic jams? It is not New York. Absolutely not. Get ready with that record that I had in there, that great old record. I went, hold it there, and I'll give you the cue now. What would you guess? Well, we just have a report. Now, I want you to listen to this because it's a sickening story, really a sickening story. If you spend much of your life on the Long Island Expressway or on Route 22, I want you to listen to this. Please bring it in big. No, 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 the other one. No. Sorry, Herb. It's the other record. The first one I gave you. The one you brought up with the Scott record. That's it. Yeah, that's the one. You get it set up. All set in there? Here we go. Oh, yeah, Roma. Ah, Roma. Beautiful, bellissimo Roma. Yeah, Roma. 4 times a day, 6 days a week. In Roma, Ben-Hur rides again. Down the hill by the baths of Caracalla, past the circular sweep of the Colosseum, around the monster marble Victor Emmanuel, known as the typewriter, through the narrow gates and the ancient Roman walls, over the old stone bridge arching the Tiber, in and out the cobblestone squares and the magnificent splashing fountains, dodging naked statues, past the Baroque old churches, threading by the ruins, under the low arches of the crumbling aqueducts, into the incredibly winding, crowded streets, up the cramped alleyways, horns blowing, mufflers whining, ambulances clanging, pedestrians scattering, police whistles blasting, taxis bleeding, buses blocking, fumes rising, oaths flying. Cretino, cretino, out of my way, cretino. Uvo petrifato, uvo petrifato. Translated, you rotten egg, you cretin, you cretino. Rush Hour in Rome, a nightmare out of Fellini with the incidental dialogue by Norman Mailer. There is nothing like it anywhere else in the world. Motion without movement, madness without method. Dante's basest basement, a hell peopled only by machines, suffocating in a ceaseless, surrealistic snarl. One fiato after another, piled up in a gigantic pyramid, a cacophonous, a chaos, Dante's eighth inner circle. Cretino, cretino, get out of my way. Yes, other cities around the globe, reset that. Other cities around the globe have 2 rush hours, morning and evening. Roma, Are you ready? Has four full-blown rush hours. At midday, the merchants shutter their shops. Banks close their windows. Offices draw their blinds. And everyone heads home in a vast... They got a great word for it, because it really fits it. A vast ingorgio. 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 That's their word for traffic jam. For their three-hour siesta. And then, relaxed and renewed with a little red, the wine, vino. Everyone heads back downtown again, engulfing the city in a smothering volcanic traffic flow that seldom ever moves faster than 3 miles an hour. We quote here, it's a madness, utter madness, says Luigi Quaglia, traffic engineer for the Automobile Club of Italy. In a city, this is a village, really, a village. In less than, it's ridiculous. This little city, people are everywhere. Cars on the sidewalks, every place. The cars are going in and out of the basements, every place. It's a terrible... He says, we have 3 million people. However, we have 5 million motor vehicle trips a day, in and out of Roma. What do we do? It's ridiculous. Fantastic. Can you imagine that? Figure it out. There's 3 million people live in the city of Rome, and there are 5 million motor vehicle trips a day in and out of Rome. And now, if you know anything about Rome, all these little streets are about the width of this table here. It's unbelievable. And you always have this idea of Rome. I'll never forget, I arrived in Rome. The first time I arrived in Rome was a beautiful night. We got in about, 11:45. And I walked out into the streets from this little hotel, and I walked down through the squares, and it's just absolutely magnificent. It's like a set. And you can just feel a Da Vinci there. It's all there, you know, Michelangelo, everything. It just feels like you've stepped back 1,000 years, maybe 2,000, 3,000. Beautiful. And you see the fountains at night. They work, you know, and the water's going up and a few people walking around. What a magnificent city. And so I walked around and I said, this is unbelievable, just beautiful. And I walked all night. I spent like 8 hours just walking, and the dawn came up over the Tiber. You could see it coming up over the hills. Oh, fantastico. And then all of a sudden, just without any warning, suddenly it was fantastically transformed. It was like Vesuvius has exploded again, and out of it has come Fiatos. Millions of Fiatos, Topolino, little Fiata, millions and millions of little Peugeots, Renaults, Fiatos, all over, bicycles, motorcycles, Vespas, Lambrettas, millions of people screaming and yelling, the buses, and I was caught in the middle of this thing for hour upon hour. Ingorgio, in the gorgio. I like that. Come on, let's keep playing that. Come on. Yeah, have a fun time. Siciliano. All right, bring it up, big guy. Jump the tilt. Just be calm, friends. Listen, I want to tell you, in the middle of that traffic jam, I got stuck in a bus, and it was a lady hanging on me with 3 babies in her arms. And we had gone 7 blocks, and we were so squashed together that by the end of the 5th block, she thought I was her husband. And she kept talking to me in Sicilian Italian and blowing garlic all over me. And, of course, you pick up Italian very quickly in Italy, you know. And I kept saying, buono, 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 no, 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 waving my hands, no, 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 which is Italian for get off my back, baby. I don't have any time for this. Come on, let's go up on the tables. Vino.
Isn't that a great record? Tarantella. Siciliano. Palermo. Oh, Statistico. Yeah. Realissimo. Federico Fellini.
Tonight's program was produced by Carlos De La Ponte.
Evenings at 6:45 on WOR, Stan Lomax with a complete rundown of the day's activities and sports. Stay tuned now for Lester Smith and the news.
This is Joanne Woodward. If you think some land should be left undisturbed by man,